I'm Leonard Williams, and this is the Jets Blog Podcast.
Welcome back to the Jets Blog Podcast. I am your host, Corey Griffin, and with me, as always, on the other line, it's Brian Bassett. Hey, buddy.
Hey, Corey. Sorry I wasn't always with you last week, but I'm glad to be back.
It's okay. We had the other Brian Costello filled in for you, although I think it was 2 weeks ago at this point. We're now skipping weeks. We want to thank Brian Costello for filling in for you while you apparently prioritize your children over this show, which I should point out, I think this show is older than one of your children. So, I mean, it's clear where your priorities lie.
It's definitely older than one. I think it might be older than two of my children at this point. Wow. So, right. Really, the podcast is truly my second child, and then Ava and Eden are my third and fourth child. I never thought about it that way, but
I'm here to help.
I know. I'll treat you as the co-parent as you are. Sorry, I'll respect you just as much.
It's okay. Well, there are plenty of co-parents of the show. Plenty of people who have helped grow this show, who have joined this show. One of them being Ray Lucas, who is on an all-new Jets Nation on SNY this Sunday with Janae Coakley. They will also be joined by former Jet DeBrickashaw Ferguson, who in his own way helped grow this show by being such an excellent and reliable player for so long. They will wrap up OTAs. They'll look forward to the upcoming minicamp. Janae Coakley will also sit down with Sheldon Richardson to, I imagine, discuss his amazing weight loss, his decision to shed some pounds, and to look ahead to this upcoming season on Jets Nation. You can watch that again Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern, only on SNY. Make sure not to miss that. Also, make sure you don't miss this, because while Janae and Ray might have Sheldon Richardson and DeBrickashaw Ferguson, we have our own longtime dream guest on the phone herself. Kimberly Martin finally joins the show after roughly 37 attempts to get her on the air.
Our schedules finally linked up. I'm so glad.
We are very, very happy to have you here. And as a gift to you, as Brian and I's parental podcast gift to you, we are going to give you a full segment, a full show, essentially, with no Ryan Fitzpatrick talk. This will be the only time we mention his name.
Oh, praise the Lord. I can't even imagine a day going by without Ryan Fitzpatrick talk. So thank you for giving me something I haven't had since I don't know how long, since last year. Jeez.
It's been a very, very, very long time, and I think that it's all good that we give it a rest, that we move on. I also would prefer not to mention Muhammad Wilkerson, since absolutely nothing has changed since January.
Exactly.
But, you know, you've been out there a couple weeks now. As I mentioned, OTAs are wrapping up. Minicamp is upcoming. What are your impressions? I mean, look, I get there in shorts and essentially T-shirts. They're not even trying, really, most of the time. But what are your impressions of the atmosphere out there? What's the attitude like? How do they look so far in spring?
Yeah, you know, it's OTAs, like you said. So everybody looks good in shorts. Quarterbacks look decent throwing against air, except Bryce Petty and Christian Hackenberg have struggled, you know, a few times, you know, during some of the practices that the media is allowed to see. We're only out there once a week during OTAs. So, but, you know, Gino looks great this time of year, as he always does. And that's the tricky thing about OTAs in the spring and early summer, because, like you said, they don't have pads right now. So guys look great. The real test is going to be in training camp. But, you know, team morale very high. Everybody's buying into Todd Bowles. They've already bought into Todd Bowles. The whole culture change is evident. You know, guys are running gassers. You know, they believe they saw the product on the field last year, and they believe that, you know, year two they can be better, even though their QB situation isn't resolved yet. But, you know, right now offense looks better than they did this time last year, just because it's a second year under Chan Gailey. So that familiarity with the system is obviously paying dividends.
You know, Kim, one question I have is, and I don't see much talk about it, but is a little bit in the last couple of weeks, but is Matt Forte. Right. Obviously, there's some questions about who's going to be taking snaps on our center, but I think it's pretty clear who's going to be the lead back in the offense this year. What have you been your impressions of watching Matt Forte and kind of how he works with the team, you know, his relationship with Brandon Marshall? Obviously, they have, you know, a longstanding relationship. What have you noticed when you watch him and kind of how he interacts with this team and his teammates?
No, he's in a good spot. I mean, yeah, he's 30, but, you know, like you said, one of his best friends, Brandon Marshall, is on the team. He believes that, you know, obviously age is nothing but a number. So he's eager to prove that, you know, though the Bears didn't want him, he's still got a lot left in the tank. You know, I'm excited. I'm excited to see what the Jets will be able to do with not only Forte, but also the combination of Forte and Bilal Powell on the field at the same time. I don't think people are really thinking about it in that sense, but that's another area that I think will be really exciting, because those two, I'm a big Powell supporter. I think he's
Me too.
Underrated. I think last year we got to see what, you know, the value that he brought, the versatility, as a pass catcher, you know, his pass protection, all that. So the two of them together, I think, could be a really formidable duo. So, you know, Forte, he can do it all. He can do it all. My only question is the durability. I know people, you know, some fans and some analysts are think, like, you know, this is a slam dunk. I have high hopes for Matt Forte in this offense, but, you know, I'm reserving judgment until I actually see us get into a couple of games to see what it really looks like and to see how his body responds. And you know, there's a reason the Bears didn't want him. And I'm not saying he's not a fantastic player, but I'm always cautious and I always take the reserved approach when, okay, if the team doesn't want a guy, why might that be? What did they see that maybe, you know, us new people aren't seeing yet? So, but I think it'll be a good fit.
You know, I'm curious. So one of the things that came out this week was the Devin Smith quotes about his rehab and about this season, and the kind of not jump to conclusions, but the logical assumption that there's a real chance he's going to start the season on the PUP list. I realize that this is, you know, this happens every spring where things come out and people say things. I'm not that surprised. He got injured. He had suffered a serious injury in December of last year, and even though it's a 9-month recovery for the knee injury, I mean, is it really that surprising that they might pup someone when you know they have, you know, not a ton of depth at wide receiver, but they have guys, they have bodies there after Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker, rather than having him hold up a roster spot if they know he can't play until week 4 or week 5 at the earliest?
Yeah, no, I didn't expect Devin Smith to be a factor, really, as far as from an injury standpoint. So I'm not surprised that he has no timetable in his head or the team's not really sure, you know, when he'll be actually back on the field. You know, this kid's been banged up a lot. Yeah. He was just drafted. You know, you had the freaky collision during training camp where he broke his ribs, and then, you know, the ACL tear. So, you know, I was more taking a wait and see approach myself, because I didn't expect that he would even be close to being healthy very soon. And on top of that, you know, he's healthy to be on the field, but when can he be super good? You know,
right.
The
yeah,
that Jets fans expected to see when he was first drafted. You know, so I wasn't getting too caught up in the Devin Smith timetable, because I figured it would take a while for us to even see what the Jets envisioned when they drafted him.
Yeah, and that's I guess my follow-up question. You know, I thought that right before the injury, even in the weeks beforehand, he kind of, you know, I think before the touchdown catch, he started to show up a little bit. And he was separating pretty well if you look at the tape. He was getting open. Obviously, the quarterback, who shall not be named, has arm limitations, which kind of make him and Devin Smith a odd mix at times. But I thought he was getting open. He was separating. He was running crisp routes. I liked the way he was running as a wide receiver before he got hurt. How much you know, how much injury time, how much time on the sidelines is too much? Because like you said, I mean, he had the rib injury, missed almost all of training camp last year. He took a little while to get going. Then he gets going. Then he gets hurt again. He's probably going to miss. He's going to miss obviously most of training camp, if not all of training camp in practicality this year. And then it's all of a sudden going to be probably October, November before he's back on the field. I mean, how much time is too much time lost?
I think any time that you're on the sideline is too much. You know what I mean? Just because he's so young. Because his rookie year was not what anybody anticipated. So you have, you know, when he had the training camp injury, it was like, okay, Devin Smith, it's taken him a while to get comfortable on the field, return from the rib. And so, by the, like you said, by the time he actually got on the field to play, you know, or I should say, excuse me, by the time he got injured with the second injury, you know, you finally saw glimpses of like, okay, this kid looks a little bit more comfortable. And then he got hurt. So now it's just another reset. And I think that's not good for a young player's development because, you know, it's the NFL. Like, if you're not on the field, there's somebody else, another guy who could potentially be more eager than you, you know, mm-hmm. a no-name guy who could come in and want to earn a spot or earn more playing time. So, you know, I don't think all hope is lost with Devin Smith, but I just think any time that a young kid isn't on the field, it hurts his progress and development.
Yeah, I'm with you, Kim. Like, I think, you know, the meter is running, right? Like, the meter's not, you know, expired yet. But, right, the more time that he's off the field, the more time that he's away from this team, the more time he's not producing, you know, yards, catches, touchdowns, you know, on the field, it's only going to make it harder for him, you know, to become a, you know, I mean, they drafted him in the second round, right? Like, they have high hopes for him, you would expect, over the next 3 years, right? But, right, if he can't stay healthy or can't stay on the field, you know, that's not helping matters. You know, one of the guys that was interesting, kind of, you know, you're talking about other guys who might be eager to jump in and, you know, pick up that playing time. A lot of people talk about Quincy Enunwa. One of the guys who stood out to me a little bit at the end of last year, he had some ups and downs for sure, was Kenbrell Tompkins. Have you seen much out of him this spring, or have the coaches talked about him at all this spring?
Well, Todd Bowles is not a guy who is very effusive in praise in general.
You don't say.
Unless we're talking about Gladys Knight and the Pips, right? Or the Commodores or something. I don't know.
I don't know if you heard, but he's the anti-Rex. So he's not, at this time of year, he's definitely not, you know, naming any guys who have stood out personally. So, but watching Kenbrell, he's somebody that I really like as a player. I'm intrigued by him because I think he made couple good plays last year where you thought, you know, okay, extended drives, like, okay, this guy is flashing a little bit. You know, I know the Jets have Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall, and you mentioned Quincy Enunwa. So I am curious to see if Kenbrell is going to get more reps during the regular season, because in practice, you know, last week, I believe, the day that Needy was there, I think Gino hit him for like a 50-yard touchdown or something like that. And Tompkins was blanketed. I forget who the quarterback was, but the guy was draped all over him, and he still came down and made the catch. And, you know, he shows, you know, that he has the ability, the speed, you know, the toughness to go up there and make plays. Now, of course, like any receiver, he drops passes here and there, you know, ones that you think are easy, easy catches. But I like him. I really do. I think he could be somebody to watch. Now, whether the Jets coaches agree with me or not, that remains to be seen. But yeah, I'm intrigued by Tompkins.
All right. Brian, do you have any more football questions?
Well, I think one thing I did want to come back on, circle back on a little bit, on kind of the Forte and Bilal Powell, and you kind of mentioned, you know, two of those guys, and I think I'd seen some reports about, you know, maybe they're going to move Forte to the slot so they can get, you know, Kyrie or Bilal Powell on the field at the same time. I know as a reporter you can't talk specifics about formations, but knowing the talent that this team has, like, if you were to just project, you know, just, you know, ballpark, right? do you think that Matt Forte is going to be will essentially be the third receiver for this team come December? Will he have the, you know, the third most targets on this team behind Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall, assuming everybody stays healthy?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. That's what I would envision, just because that the pass catching ability is that's the big thing that Forte brings from the in the running back position, because that's something that you know, Chris Ivory had to answer. You know, like, how come you're not catching as many passes? And he would always defend his, you know, his ability to catch the football. So that's the thing that really stands out about Forte. So I would assume that, you know, his targets would be up. I assume that they, you know, Chan Gailey had said, I believe, at the start of OTAs that, you know, we're not trying to squeeze Matt Forte into our offense. Like, I'm trying to make our offense fit around Matt Forte and the other guys that we have. And if I'm Gailey, how do I maximize that skill set?
Yeah, that makes me a little tingly when you say that. When a coach says he's willing to, you know, work to his player's strengths as opposed to the player fitting into his system, like, that makes me tingly. So thank you. I appreciate that. That's it. That's all I got, Corey. That's all I got.
All right. So when we, a few weeks ago, we realized, you know, we've done a lot of different things in off-seasons past, but I wanted to spend this off-season kind of showing the Jets, the people who listen to this show, the Jets fans, a different side of the people who cover the team. And when we put out a question saying, would you guys be interested in getting, like, you know, us talking to the beat writers and asking questions that aren't just, you know, who's running with the first team and how does the quarterback look and what's the defense like, you know, actually getting to know where you guys come from, talk to you about, like, the different, want to talk to Brian Costello last week about, you know, the newspaper industry and how things have changed with social media and being an old school beat person. You're kind of in the same category, but you're also, like, we all can have a 75 minute conversation about women in social media, women in sports social media. So I kind of want to touch on that. But before we start, I just wanted you to know that when we asked this question to our followers on Twitter, you were the overwhelming response about who they wanted to us to talk to and to get to know more about. Yes. It was not even close. It was like not even close. You were the number one person. So I guess we'll start with, you know, if you had to give the Jets fans a tidbit or two tidbits or whatever that they don't know about you, other than, you know, your Twitter profile and your love of rain boots, what would it be? What would you like the Jets fans to know about you?
What I'd like them to know. One, I'm from Brooklyn, so I'm a New York City girl. But mostly, as far as the job goes, one of my biggest pet peeves is the quote unquote New York media label, because I don't feel like that describes me. You know, I'm not out here trying to get the gotcha quotes or come up with the headline so you click on it. I really do. I was a psychology major undergrad. So I am more interested in getting to know the players. Of course, the football is interesting too, but I'm really intrigued by the stories about the guys underneath their helmets. I want you to understand how they think, how they're not much different than a lot of fans. How they see the world. So that's sort of how I approach it. To me, the relationship building is the goal, as opposed to necessarily generating sources. You know, like, I try to get the, you know, develop a good rapport with players, with front office people, coaches around the league, execs around the league, because I'm all about transparency, and I want to give an honest assessment of what is happening behind the scenes. So I think, I bring up the New York media label, I think it's easy to lump everybody together and act like, oh, we're this, like, you know, crazy crew of people that are out just to make a name for ourselves. You know, like, no reporter should ever be the story. I'm not trying to be the story, except when we're talking about my kick-ass rain boots and my Twitter avatar, then I'm fine with that. But really, you know, I like writing about people. I like writing about sports. So that's why I do it, no other reason.
Yeah, Corey, I don't know about you. I've seen Kim, you know, a time or two around the, you know, the facility, and I've never seen her throw bows to, like, you know, get up to the front of the group there. But but yeah, no, I'm curious. So you mentioned psychology. Like, do you feel like you use some of the I don't know, training or lessons or whatever you learned studying that in terms of how do you get these guys to relate to you or tell you things that maybe they wouldn't normally say, even if it's on background or whatever? Do you find that that's having that background helps you as a journalist kind of do those things, create those relationships like you mentioned?
I think having my ridiculous background, like I was a psychology major undergrad and psychology and African American studies double major undergrad. Mm. Then I worked in finance for a year and a half for people that don't know. So I was out in the real world. I worked at U.S. Trust Company of New York and in Manhattan. And then I just went to Syracuse because I was kind of bored of the finance life. So I went to Syracuse, got my master's in magazine journalism. And now I work at a newspaper covering the NFL. So I think because I'm not the typical, I didn't follow the typical beat writer path. I've seen other things. I've done other things. I'm also a woman. I'm also not a middle-aged white man, so I stand out because of that, too. So I think I just bring a different perspective. I don't relate to players the same way because I don't know. I guess my background, I think when you have been outside of sports media or print journalism, I think you've had some different experiences and you've met different people. So yeah. I'm always intrigued, yeah. But I love hearing about players' wives and their kids and like their charities and stuff. Like, you know, I talk to guys, sometimes I'll miss a Ryan Fitzpatrick, the start of a Ryan Fitzpatrick interview or a Geno Smith interview because, you know, I'm actually having side conversations with other players asking about, like, how was your weekend? Nothing great, nothing for the paper, but I think it's important that you don't only approach guys for a quote when you have a story. You know, yeah. Like you can approach them just like as a human being, like what's going on today. Mm-hmm. So I think the fact that I don't look like every other beat writer because I'm a woman and I'm black, I think that does help me. But I also think it's been a hindrance because, you know, sexism, racism—it's out there. It happens. It's still happening. And so I've been bitten a time or two. Players or executives may not give me the same respect. And I'm not only talking about the Jets. I mean, I've been around other teams and stuff like that. But you know, you kind of just have to figure out. Okay, well, I know what the situation is. How do I make the most out of this opportunity? So when players, when fans on Twitter or people, you know, make comments like, oh, like you must be super friendly with players, you know, and people tell me to ignore that stuff. And most of the time I do, but it just shows that there's another layer that I have to deal with that, let's say, you know, that my
colleagues
don't.
You're going to get it one way or another, right? Like, you know, either you don't know about it because of this or you get special treatment because of that.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned social media and I don't think it's going out on a limb to say you probably have the most unique and outward and forward facing and personable Twitter account among the Jets beat writers. You know, there are some accounts that are mostly links and stories and those sorts of things. And then, you know, you are far more interactive with the fans. You're far more interactive on Twitter with other writers and in terms of social issues and in terms of, you know, issues of racism, issues of sexism. How, you know, do you think that the way you act on Twitter in terms of, you know, standing up for yourself, standing up for women, standing up for black women, standing up for black men, talking about things like sexual assault, talking about issues like Ferguson, do you think that that has changed the way that you're viewed either negatively or positively in the business of being a sports journalist, where a lot of people just want you to be a person holding a microphone?
Yeah, you know, it's a tight line to walk because I get, as some of my other colleagues, but I do get the, oh, stick to sports, or I don't follow you for, you know, your whatever political commentary or whatever, which I try not to comment too much on the campaign right now and what's going on in politics. But I think, you know, I think as I'm not famous, people don't really know who I am. You know what I mean? Like, in the grand scheme of things, like, no one knows who I am. But I feel like I have a tiny platform where I can be my authentic self to a degree and be a not well-rounded, but just be a complete person. You know, like, I've had conversations with other reporters. It's like, oh, my Twitter account is just for sports, and I stick to that. And that's great. More power to them. But I'm not just Kimberly the Jets beat writer. I'm Kimberly a Black woman. I'm Kimberly a woman. I'm Kimberly a Brooklynite. You know, like, I'm married. You know, like, there are a lot of things that interest me. I love, if people follow me, they know I love rabbits and I love animals. Like, I feel like just because I'm a sports writer, I don't want to have to just be confined to a box that I can only tweet Jets-related content, because I'm much more than that. And at some point, I won't be the Jets beat writer, just because at some point, whether, you know, the newspaper industry folds or Newsday moves on or I move on or whatever, there's going to be a time where I don't have this same job and maybe this tiny platform. And I have to always be myself as long as I'm respectful. And I will say, you know, some people may have seen, like, I've gotten a racist letter mailed to Newsday, and it was sent to my house by one of our secretaries. And the letter had the N-word and had all this stuff and was telling me to stay away from Black people. And I don't even know if this guy realized I'm Black or if that was part of the joke, like, he was insulting me. But, you know, I put it on Twitter, but with, I cropped out his name and his hometown because I didn't think that was really relevant, but just as a way of saying, like, look, like, please stop telling me about a post-racial America. Like, if I can get a letter typed to me and mailed to my office about the N-word 97 times, like, don't fool yourself. And some people thought I wrote the letter myself, and that really hurt me, because who the hell has time for all that? But, you know, it's like, should I, some people have said, why did you give that guy, you know, but I did it more so for the people that seem to, with their heads in the clouds, like, oh, they have a Black president, like, you know, Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee, pretty much, you know, like, to think that this world is great. It's like, this world is awesome, but let's not ignore some basic truths. So another sports writer may not have tweeted that letter, but like I said, I kind of have to be myself, and I feel like people are always surprised at all the things that this job entails, everything that comes with it. And I try to show people it's more than, hey, do you get to talk to athletes? You know, there's a lot that comes along with being a female NFL beat writer.
I have a quick question, Brian, if you don't mind. I just want to follow up real quick. You know, with those sorts of issues, you know, with the advent of social media, with the advent of athlete, quote unquote, brands, you know, whether you want to look back to the start of Michael Jordan up until now, I'm just curious how you think, what you think athletes' roles are in addressing these topics. You know, you mentioned that you have this platform, whatever size it may be, and these people who are spewing these hate and have their own tiny or smaller, usually hopefully smaller platforms to spew their language. But these athletes, whether it's someone like Brandon Marshall who has this TV platform and is incredibly outspoken about mental illness, or whether it's LeBron James who addresses police violence, I'm just curious what role you think athletes play in these sorts of situations in the advent of, you know, Ben Simmons got $15 million from Nike and he's never played a game in the NBA before. You know, money rules all, and these kids are at once expected to be spokesmen for these multi-billion-dollar brands, but they're also expected to be, you know, 20-something Black kids who grow up in a world that is not as simple and as easy as a lot of people would like it to be.
Right. I think it is a delicate balance, because, you know, I think there's a lot of hypocrisy also, because, you know, as much as I hate to generalize the media, but for lack of a better word, let's say, you know, the media wants guys, athletes, men and women, to be transparent, to be honest, to give unfiltered quotes and tell us what they really think. And then when they do, there's a rush to judgment, whether it's by some members of the media or fans, because we don't like what is being said. You know, it's hard, because if you put yourself out there, you have to deal with all the backlash. And for some athletes nowadays, it's almost like with social media, everything you do, say, snap, tweet, whatever, it's there for public consumption, whether you realize it or not. For those athletes, it's easier sometimes to keep their mouth shut, because it's like, what do I gain from putting my true feelings out there only to be ridiculed? You know, and I sat down with, last season, I believe, I sat down with Willie Colon and Brick Shaw Ferguson, you know, and I asked them about athletes being social advocate, social activists. And, you know, I found it interesting because Brick is somebody who, we all know Willie is so outspoken and, you know, he'll tell you how he feels in a heartbeat. But I was really interested in hearing Brick's perspective because, you know, he said, sometimes you're damned if you do and damned if you don't, because you have to, as a Jets player, you have to represent the organization. You have to, but you also have to represent whether it's your hometown, your community, your high school, your college. You know, you have to be an example. But, you know, sometimes it's a struggle for athletes to really say what's on their mind, because, you know, if their words are misconstrued, heaven forbid, then the narrative becomes something different. It could be, you know, it could be twisted and turned into something that they never intended it to be or never meant. So I would like to see, because, you know, athletes have huge platforms. Celebrities, they have the stage. I do, in my heart, believe that, you know, when you have a platform, you should use it, because you have a voice that people are listening to. And it's not just athletes, all sorts of celebrities, you know, they have the reach, they have the pull to potentially affect change. And to squander that opportunity, I think, it would be a waste. But I'm also not naive, and I realize that it's so much easier for me, who no one knows really, to say that and to require that of other people. So I would hope if I was in their shoes, I would be as forthcoming with my feelings, whether it's on social media or in the public eye, because, you know, young people have a lot to say and their views should be heard.
That's very well said. I don't think there's many, I don't think there's many things we could put on top of that, Sunday. Before we wrap up here, we'll lighten up really quickly with a couple quick hitter questions. I asked Brian Costello the same two questions last week. I promised that I would come up with more as this series continues. I still only have two, mostly because I come up with them and then I forget them. But I'll ask you the same two that I asked Brian last week. The first one, if you had to be trapped on a desert island with one fellow member of the New York Jets beat crew, who would it be and why?
I would throw myself in the ocean.
You should know that Brian said you.
Yeah, no, he texted me after and was like, "Hey, just so you know, I did mention." Yeah, no, this I would, if I had to choose, like, gun to my head, like, had to choose somebody, I would probably say Dennis Wozniak from the AP, because he and I are super tight. He and I interact a lot on Twitter. Our little cubbies in the Jets facility are right next to each other, so he's somebody that approaches the beat the same way as me, thinks the same way as me, a fantastic writer. So I would probably not get sick of him as easily as maybe other people. So I would say he's an all-around good dude. So
I don't know anyone that doesn't love Dennis. Like, I've never heard anyone say a bad thing about Dennis or anything Dennis has ever done.
Great guy. Great. If fans are not following Dennis on Twitter, they should, because he is tremendous, and like I said, a really good writer, and not here for any of the BS. It's really about doing good stories.
Okay, last question here. This is important. I will judge you harshly depending on your answer. If you had a last meal and it was either tacos or pizza, which one are you choosing?
Oh, interesting. It's funny you ask this, because last night at 11 o'clock, I was craving fish tacos for some reason. I'm going to say, I love pizza. I would say pizza.
That's the wrong answer.
It is? Oh, sorry.
There's no wrong answers. This is a postmodern society. Come on. Come on, Corey.
The answer is always tacos. The answer is always tacos. Fair enough. Pizza is delicious, especially if you get it from a place in New York and nowhere else, because all other pizza is terrible, especially Chicago deep dish.
It's an abomination.
All right. Well, Kimberly, we very much appreciate you hopping on with us. I appreciate you finding the time in your busy schedule to coalesce with our schedule and giving us a lot of great insight on things way beyond football. Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of your day. And hopefully at some point this offseason, the quarterback who shall not be named, it's signed and we can all move on and you can get a little bit of a break before training camp starts.
Exactly. Thank you so much for having me, guys. I enjoyed it.
I just can't say enough good things about Kimberly. That interview was awesome. The only bad thing is that she made the wrong choice at the end. It's unfortunate that she chose pizza over our friendship, but I'll work on forgiving her. Hopefully by training camp, when I go out to Florham Park, I'll be able to look her in the eye. But want to thank her again. Make sure you follow her on Twitter at @KmartLI on the Twitter machine. Brian is at Brian_Bassett.
Corey's at Corey Griffin NBC.
Make sure that you guys are subscribed to this show on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, and all those places. But if you want to get all other SNY.TV podcasts, you can also subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever else you listen to podcasts. You are, if you're a fan of the Mets, the Jets, the Knicks, the Rangers, Islanders, college basketball, recruiting, any of New York sports or New York topics, you can get your podcasts all in one place. So just make sure you subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network, and please make sure to rate and review that channel, because much like you rate and review our channel, you rate and review that channel on iTunes, the more rates, the more reviews, and the more stars you guys give it, the more people get to see it, the more it surfaces, and the more we get to have amazing hosts like Kimberly give us that time of day, because they see how many people this reaches, and it's just a ton of fun for us to have those conversations. We should be back next week. We'll see, but if we don't, until we talk to you next time, folks, keep calm and jet on.
Let's talk about the real battle. Punters!
This has been the Jets Blog Podcast, part of the SNY.TV Audio Network.